how we may go forward. But in the meantime, the care group has been up to lots of things. And this weekend, we're having a retreat down at Jhana Grove, and it's billed as the Listen, Reflect, Connect retreat. So for all my last minute friends, now is the time to register. We've got a good crowd coming, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It will be a little bit different to the usual retreat because this retreat is all about interaction and teaching the lost art of reflective listening. So, yeah, please, if you want to come along, now is your opportunity. I'm doing the food shopping in the morning. So, clickety-clack. but I'd like to introduce Veronica Damali. So Veronica is studying social work at university.
Yeah.
And she is our outreach coordinator here at the BSWA.
Unfortunately.
Fortunately. We are very lucky to have you. And she has also been coordinating the chaplaincy service at Curtin University. So you're probably not aware, but the Buddhist Society does all sorts of wonderful things. And if you come along to the retreat, you can learn more about it. So we do chaplaincy, prison visits, nights like this with lay teacher talks and meditations and try and chat afterwards. There's a lot of opportunity. But Veronica has been staying at the Rains Retreat.
Yeah.
The entire Rains Retreat.
Yeah, I have been.
Yeah, and you've learnt an awful lot in that time.
I'm not sure, but we'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out.
we'll find out.
So Veronica is going to share with us what she learnt on Rains Retreat.
Okay, I guess over to me. Welcome everyone. Can you all hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So I thought we can start with some meditation because we've been running around all day. That's always a good start. So I would like to invite you to find a comfortable position, however it is, on the chair, on the ground. Feel free to lie down. If you want to sit next to me, you're welcome. So if you've been listening to Ajahn Brahm, he always starts by asking you to relax the body. So let's do that. Find yourself a comfortable position. So just take a moment to just scan your body. Just acquaint yourself with your body, because a lot of the time we take our body for granted, expecting our body to do this, do that, abide our every command and order. And we don't realize how tired we can be sometimes. So, just ask your body, how do you feel? Just take all the time you need to make yourself comfortable. Body is usually the biggest hindrance, at least for me, to go deep or to be still. You can choose to close your eyes or not. It's completely up to you. And there's no strict rules as to how to reflect on your body. You can go top down, bottom up, whatever it is that you please. And as you check in with your body, usually without any effort, you can feel your body relaxing because you're giving it kindness, giving it attention that we don't usually give. You start feeling tension. You identify where the tensions are in your body. And you just be kind to it. Be gentle. Giving it a bit of tender loving care. A little bit of softness. And that's enough. There's nothing we need to do. Just be being here. Being with yourself. Spending some quality time with yourself. Now as you sit, you can start feeling yourself being more grounded, more stable, or maybe not, but you will eventually, because it's part of the process. So I invite you to trust the process of kindness, gentleness, stillness. In meditation, they are one of the same. It might take a bit longer to relax, but it'll happen. It's not our job to do it. Our job is to just sit still and relax. Relax to the max. Just being here. Being a witness to whatever it is you're experiencing. That is the most important thing right now. And when I say witness the moment, I literally mean anything you are observing or witnessing. Could be your busy mind, could be tiredness, could be any emotions you're feeling. We're not here to change anything. We're not here to be a better person. We are here to accept ourselves as it is, to accept our mind, to accept whatever it is we are experiencing. It's not right or wrong. It is what it is. It's being with it, being it with kindness. Our mind naturally settles by itself because that's its nature. There's no need for us to do anything. So if we truly am letting things be and leaving things alone, you will see for yourself in your mind that Everything is starting to slow down. Spaces between thoughts will be longer because we are not agitating it. You'll find that the breath will come to you when it comes to you. No need to watch the breath. Just be. To really be here. And watch the mind. Let peace come to you. Let stillness come to you. Just breathe. No need to watch the breath. It all happens naturally. Just enjoy the moment. This is the best gift you can give for yourself. Now we are coming to the end of the meditation. I'd like to invite you to reflect on the sit. How do you feel? What just happened in the last 20-30 minutes? What have worked and what hasn't worked? You don't need to have an answer. It's just an opportunity to reflect, for the mind to know. Right, you feel free to stretch and move. All right. So here's the talk. Or should I just end it here? Okay, look, this is my first talk, and I'm daring enough to not plan anything and hope something smart or wise come out, to be honest. Ajahn Brahm said he is influenced by Ajahn Chah, and I'm influenced by him. So anything great, you can praise him. Anything bad, just complain to him. It's really not me. I'm too conditioned by him. So actually, I thought I might change a little bit because, you know, I'm used to facilitating groups instead of giving a talk. So I thought if there's any topic or question or anyone want to talk about, want to share and I can talk about it, that might be a good start, but you don't have to. There's something might come, something will come up, but I just like to, in case anyone has some topic that they wanted me to share or talk. Oh, not really. Ah, there you go. Fear, there you go.
Hello?
Yep.
I said topic of fear.
Of fear. That's a good one. Okay, so let's see what is in here and what comes out. Okay, fear. It's a very interesting topic because, you know, fear is always associated to anxiety and, you know, public speaking, a lot of anxiety, not knowing what to do, the outcome. So essentially, I think with fear, we are worried about the outcome a lot of what other people think about a lot. So for me, of course, there are lots of fear in my life, lots and lots of fear, and I have to deal with it one at a time. Fear of the unknown, fear of anything really, because a lot of the time we don't know and we are not comfortable with that, and therefore we have fear. So, and it's not something that we realize and we can overcome it. It's not like sometimes you have that aha moment about certain emotion and it's gone almost immediately. But with fear, it's like so tricky. And it's an ongoing thing that you have to keep working throughout your life. Even monks in the Buddha's time are afraid of ghosts or creepy crawlies or whatever it is they experience in the forest. And that's why the Buddha teaches them to practice metta, loving kindness, and that's the antidote for fear. Because, you know, because a lot of time fear is because we're thinking about me, myself, I. And when you're in the space of loving kindness, there is no me. There's no, the ego is almost minimal or don't exist at all. Someone told me that I didn't came out with that. I'm not that wise yet. But I thought it was a really good one. Like if you have fear towards a person, or say job interview, I've done two already in the last week. There's always that anxiety and fear. But if you put that space between you and the person, put loving kindness in the space, then the fear sort of just, there's no space for the fear, because you're in the loving kindness, in the softness and gentleness of it. So, like, what comes out in my mind right now is what the Ajahn Brahm and all the different teachers talk about, the fear they experience living in the forest. I remember Ajahn always said, he was doing his tudong. From memory, I could be wrong, so you have to check with him if you want to know the exact story. But he said he was on his own meditating in a hut or something, and he can hear noise, and the noise started to come closer to him, started to be louder. And at first he thought it was just some wild animal in the distance, and as it gets closer, he thought, oh, maybe it's a bigger animal. And by the end of it, he thought it might be a tiger. So he thought, okay, he better open his eyes. And it turns out it's this tiny little mouse running around. So that, I thought that was a really cool story to remind us that the fear is what we are projecting rather than what it is. Like, it's always bigger in my head, and I see that in myself too. And having to work with it. And sometimes it's also being with the fear. Because a lot of the time we only want to feel good. We don't want to feel the negative emotions. A lot of time we want to just be happy all the time, which doesn't work. You know, our life goes up and down and we have to deal with all sorts of emotions. And that's part of the meditation practice. So We feel, and the problem is when we identify with the emotions. That's what I notice. So fear can be there, or, you know, frustration can be there. But when we put, oh, I'm fearful, I'm frustrated, then it sort of just made it worse. Whereas if you see, oh, okay, there is fear, it'll pass like anything. It's anicca. You know, it's impermanent, then you become having this, it becomes neutral. You know, you still feel the emotions and you don't associate with it, And the classic example Ajahn always used to push your hand away so you don't just see that, because there might be fear, there might be anxiety, but there are also other emotions there. There is that relief, there is maybe, you know, you can be anxious and excited at the same time, because anxiety is actually, you can change your perception when you see anxiety as excitement. There is this, how do I say it? There's this, the same physiological experience you feel with excitement and anxiety, but our mind chooses the anxiety bit. Even with stress, like you can so be friend with stress, because it's gearing up your body for something that is challenging. So stress essentially is a function for you to prepare you for anything that seems a bit hard in life. So we can change our perception of stress to something positive instead of all stress. And funny enough, I was there was this TED talk from maybe 8 years ago that I like to watch and rewatch it. They said that, you know, thinking that stress is bad is what killing you. It's not the stress itself. Stress is there to help you and to cope, and also to be able to read the signal. Of course, there are more to it. I won't go in too much into it, but I really like that, because there's a lot of Dhamma in it about choosing how we perceive things. Because I can perceive someone being difficult, or they're just being themselves. There's no control really. And does that make sense? Yeah. So I'll see what else come out, right? So actually, metta, as I was saying, loving kindness is the antidote for fear, for stress, and a lot of other emotions that we dislike. So I find metta a very interesting topic, and it's not something that you can learn by just listening or reading a book. I mean, it took me 10 years to understand what loving kindness is, and loving kindness is something that you have to experience it for yourself. If we talk about meditation, loving kindness meditation, everyone has their own way to do it. And there's no one size fits all. There's no instruction, step by step instruction for you to do it. Because, like when I first started meditation, I will try to find the literally step by step guide. Okay, so what do I do? Oh, you create the make a mantra for yourself, or may I be happy, or whatever. So okay, I literally tried it, and it becomes very, very tiring, and the conclusion was, maybe it's just not for me. But that eventually, of course, I learned that's not true, because metta is just different, and unfortunately or unfortunately, you have to find your own way. So this year in Rains, at the beginning of Rains, before Ajahn Brahm's birthday, there's a metta retreat where Prem has kindly gathered all the different metta guided meditation teaching with from various monks and nuns. And I sat in and listened, and I go, wow, everyone did it so differently. So why am I so stubborn trying to find a way, one technique that fits all? But I mean, we have to try, we have to start somewhere, we have to have a technique. It's to learn that doesn't fit us. So like one of the monks said, it's about relationship with whatever it is you're experiencing, and that's metta. And essentially he's right. So if we reflect on loving kindness, the quality of loving kindness is softness, it's gentleness, kindfulness, as Ajahn Brahm always said, because it's not just mindfulness, you need more than that. It's about being soft, being accepting, and it takes every shape, way and form. And therefore, I find it really hard to guide loving kindness meditation because everyone is so different. One person I absolutely like it, the other person doesn't. But what I find with loving kindness is that it's about forgiveness. That's part of loving kindness. Forgiving yourself, that's the most important thing. Forgiving yourself for whatever it is, mistakes you've done in the past, in the present. Because you don't know any better, because we don't. If you think about it, if we do know, then we would not have made the mistake, isn't it? But we keep blaming ourselves for it. And that's kind of the hardest bit. Question in already. Okay, I'll deal with that later. And that's essentially the to me, that's essentially what metta is, and gratitude. So I divide it into two, forgiving myself. And also, by forgiving myself, can I then forgive other people? I noticed that if I can't forgive another person until I forgive myself, because there's that, I'm part of the problem, I'm part of the issue. So I learned that through forgiving myself, can I then learn to forgive the other people because we are one of the same. I don't know any better, that's why I make the mistake. Therefore, how can I expect other people to not make mistake? They're human being, they make mistakes. So then it's so much easier to forgive. So that's essentially what I learned in terms of metta is forgiveness. And the other side is gratitude. Because gratitude, I don't know, sometimes I feel like we are not grateful enough in our practice. And it takes, there are many ways to practice gratitude. I know there is gratitude journaling, but sometimes it doesn't work for people. But it does take, it's an investment that is really valuable for people. So I do it in my meditation, like say, if I feel a bit dull at the beginning, like, oh, yucky day, what to do? Nothing, everything is so dull and dry. Mine is because if you're not, if you don't have that kindness, the mind usually get very restless and it will go everywhere. So sometimes I find this trick of asking myself, what am I grateful for? And then the mind, you don't have to even try, will start flooding in, you know. I'm grateful for the food. I'm grateful for the shelter. You know, I'm grateful for my friends, my Kali and Amita, spiritual friends, for the guidance I get, for Ajahn Brahm for being able to guide me through, because he's like the reason why I came into Buddhism, I suppose, like the real, well, I won't say the real, the practicing bit. So with that, then it softened the restlessness, the dullness, and the meditation sort of just take off quite quickly, quite easily. Because our job is not to still the mind. Our job essentially is to just be still and reduce our hindrances. And if you reflect on the hindrances, it's essentially desire and aversion. And we won't go into the other three because the desire and aversion is what started the whole hindrances. So if we are being restless, we are being dull. That's because we don't want to be here. We want to be somewhere else. And when we have gratitude of whatever it is we have, I find that naturally you just, the aversion sort of is not there anymore. Or at least it sort of just, it shrinks. So essentially, my way of meditating is either through forgiveness or through gratitude. Or sometimes I go, oh, it's a crazy day, isn't it? yeah, I'm sorry you feel that way, you know, and there's really nothing much we can do, and really just be absolutely kind, and I find that that's what really helped me in terms of meditation anyway. And meditation and life, it reflects. Funny enough, I was thinking I was going to be talking about sila today. So that's not happening. But what I find that that sila is what protects us, and that's what helps us in terms of our meditation, because it's our mind. It's not really some magical thing to keep these precepts, this morality. It's just how our mind works. If we don't value ourselves, we don't respect ourselves in terms of keeping what's important to us, our morality or values, then our mind will start acting up, and it's just the way it is, unfortunately. Unless your mind is strong enough to go around it, which not me. So I have to go let's watch this, let's see this. Why is it that my mind is not still? Oh, okay, so there's this area that might not have worked. But that doesn't mean we then blame ourselves for it. There's also that forgiveness come in too, realizing it, oh, okay, I made a mistake, so be it, I'm human. If I don't make mistake, I'll be enlightened. So it's really not my fault. Oh, and if we have any fear or anxiety or any aversion or resentment, the trick is to know, I have to thank Ajahn Brahmali for this. You blame your identity view, yourself, for perceiving you have a self. And that's, if you have an identity view, you'll have aversion, so it's not your fault. Seriously. You're like, go thank Ajahn Brahmali. He spilled the secret. I can't help it. So if I have a bad day, so if I, you know, did something, it's all my conditioning anyway. But at the same time, we just have that inclination to try our best to not do it again. If we do, then, oh well, it's motivation and intention. That's why the spiritual friends is very important, isn't it? Our mind is influenced by our surrounding. And therefore, who we hang out is very, very important. Like the Mangala Sutta, the highest blessing. That was an amazing sutta, because I like that sutta because I was conceited initially to think that, oh, why do people always want the highest blessing? Come on, do the work yourself. And when I read and understood the Mangala Sutta, it's essentially telling you what is the highest blessing. Not associating with the wise, not associating with fools, respecting your mom, your parents, actually, mom and dad, you know, learning about the Dhamma, and etc. I won't go through it because there's quite, I think, 15 factors that the sutta mentioned. That's the highest blessing. So to kind of wrap it up a little bit, you know, the way to overcome fear is really having loving kindness. And having loving kindness is forgiveness and gratitude. And respecting your values, what is important to you. And doing it. And knowing yourself. And doing the things that feeds you emotionally, spiritually rather. And all those will set that foundation for you and trust that things will be okay. Because if things are not okay, that's really not of your control. Like if I give a really, you know, bad talk, it's really not of my control. And the more I worry about the outcome, the more things doesn't go as planned. So once I said, I tell myself, let's get the worst talk out of the way, so then the next one won't be my worst. So that's how I deal with this. I think I ramble on enough. I hope I answer your question somehow. Is there any questions or anything people want to contribute? Yes.
I wanted to ask specifically how... Working? I wanted to ask specifically how do you practice forgiveness in your meditation?
Okay. How I forgive, how I practice meditation, forgiveness in my meditation. To be honest, I actually just repeat the phrase, I forgive myself for not understanding. Because I actually took that from a monk, Bhante Vimalaramsi. I was struggling with a situation and I was really, really, really afraid that I will have anger. So I tell myself, hey, whatever it is, you can cry, you can scream, just please, I was begging to myself, like, don't have anger, because once it reaches that stage, then I'm hurting myself. Because at that time, it's still emotion, it's still sadness. So because of that emotion, and I was listening to this talk and said that, look, you forgive yourself because you don't know any better. So when I sit there in meditation and something came up in my mind and it bothers me, and I go, well, there's really nothing you can do, is there? If there is, you would have done it. So then I tell myself, look, I forgive myself for not understanding. So that's one way, as it comes. And then at the end of my meditation, I will first say, oh, thank you very much for the practice. And, you know, I forgive myself, or I forgive you, because I'm having a conversation in myself in my head, for whatever it is you've done, unconditionally. Or I forgive myself for not understanding. And I'll try my best to be better. Or not, or I learn to accept myself, because forgiveness essentially is also that acceptance. Because, you know, we're not here to become a better person. We're here to accept ourselves the way it is. And funny enough, how things work is when we accept ourselves as it is, we tend to, like, the bad habits sort of just fall off. So it's not about pushing it or being a better person or striving, using willpower, but it's through acceptance, loving kindness, do we actually develop positive or useful habits. But that's kind of what I experience in my life. So I hope that's helpful.
Thank you.
Okay, so... So the first question is, in meditation, you don't think or you let thoughts flow and you spectate. Well, the thoughts that comes to my mind is not voluntary. You know, it comes and go. And that comes by the conditions. So essentially, if I have a busy day, then the mind will be a bit unsettled at the beginning. And it's a matter of letting it just flow, as you said, and let it be. And usually Ajahn always say, put space between the mind and the thought. Yourself and the thought. That's one way of just doing it. But how I personally do it is more not doing it, just letting it be. It's like a glass of water with a lot of sand. So throughout the day, we keep stirring it, because that's how we do it, we stir. And then when we stop, the sand will be all over the place, isn't it, in the glass. So if you keep pushing your hand in, the sand will not stop, and essentially just letting the glass be, the sand will settle by itself. So you can be a spectator towards your thoughts, but I usually just let it be, you know, and eventually it will stop. And if it's not, then I'm interfering. So that's how I look at it. And then you go, okay, and then I just ask myself, okay, what's happening here? And then I will notice, oh, okay, because I'm trying to be still. And once you accept that, that's my mind. It can go anywhere. It can be messy. It's not my problem. And then usually you'll just settle down. And you can't trick it. You can't cheat your mind. You can't trick it. You have to genuinely accept that your mind is just a mess at the moment. It's no be it. It's not of your control anyway. It's all part of the condition, right? So if the condition is right, the mind usually settles by itself. That's easy. And we are part of the conditions, but it could be, you know, when you're in Jhana Grove or in the monastery, the condition is better. So our job essentially is putting the conditions in place and reducing the hindrances as much as we can. And restraint, sense restraint is one thing that is very, very important. Practicing sense restraint, will you then be able to have the mind, will the mind then settle? Because if you practice sense restraint in your daily life, you're pretty much developing a habit of not interfering, of letting things go and leaving things be. And then it becomes a habit when in your meditation that things just be. Because it's a reflection. You can't live a life of party and a lot of sensual desire and distraction to then go in meditation and sit still. Maybe you can, but I personally can't. So if you can, then I'm sorry, you might have to ask Ajahn for more guidance. Okay, the next one is from Palestine. Ooh, that's fine. Okay, this is a long one. I struggle to love everything and everyone because when I see what we do to the planet and animals and the many groups of people that are oppressed and marginalized and killed, it hinders my ability to love. I hold a lot of hatred within me, especially towards men, because when I think of how patriarchal and misogynistic all societies in the world have been and still are, it hurts me. How can I see that there is any good in people? How can I feel loving kindness towards people who are good without thinking the evil is inherent in everyone? And do I feel loving kindness toward those who oppress others in order to become enlightened? That's a lot going through my mind. And I have to pick up what to say. essentially, I understand it is not a perfect world, unfortunately. But as you said, there's good and there's bad. Or we can accept that that's just life. Life is messy. But we can't control what other people do. But we can control ourselves, or we have a choice rather. You can see the good in the person, or the evil, or the bad bit. But I don't know. Like I feel like there is really isn't evil in people. But that's just me. Maybe I'm being naive, because there are people who are suffering, and people and when people are suffering, then sometimes they make mistakes. I think Ajahn Brahm always talk about Hitler, about how this person who creates so much destruction was able to write a beautiful poem about his mom. So essentially, there's always good and not so good in a person. So if you choose to see the nice a bit, it makes you feel better. So it's how I look at it is it's not about other people. It's not about John Doe have treated me in this way, therefore he's a bad person. But it makes me feel uncomfortable, unease. But if I see, oh, okay, John is hurt me, but at the same time, maybe he doesn't know any better. Give him the benefit of the doubt, or just see the good qualities in a person. There's also another way I forgive, actually, is to see the good quality in a person. There is always good qualities in the worst person you see. And I go through that exercise when I have a person who is really, really hard to forgive. And I go, what are their good qualities? There is always good qualities. They are kind, they're generous, they're professional, you know, there's always, always something. Trust me, I've been through that exercise a few times. If there isn't, just sit there until something come up, and your mind will come up with something eventually. Because, you know, you get sitting there, and you're like, I better come up with something so that I can go. To your last question is about, you know, to have loving kindness towards the oppressor, to become enlightened. You know, what comes to my mind is actually the simile of the soul. I can't remember, I think it's number 22 in the Majjhima Nikaya, so don't quote me on that. When I read that sutta, I go, wow, is that what it takes to be to be a Buddhist? Then I can never be a Buddhist. But now it's very inspiring, because to summarize what the simile of the soul is, the Buddha said that even if a person take a two-handed saw and saw you limb by limb, and if you don't have the thought of loving kindness towards a person, then you're not practicing my teaching. Of course, it sounds scary. It sounds like, oh. But if you think about it, if we really understand, we are all suffering, and we are all lost in some way. And the Buddha gave us the Eightfold Path to help us out of suffering. Like, for example, Angulimala, he was a serial killer. He eventually became enlightened in that very life, but he must be suffering a lot in order to be a serial killer. You know, it takes a lot of energy, effort, and anger to actually hurt someone, and it's really, really unpleasant. So can you imagine what kind of state of mind the person is in order to want to hurt someone? When you reflect on it, when I reflect on that, I have a lot of compassion for the person. Like, okay, I'm not at peace all the time, but I have moments of peace and joy and clarity that helps me going in my life. These people doesn't. And all they can do to feel anything sometimes is to, you know, drink alcohol or hurt people. And you need to have, I find that giving them a lot of compassion helps me. And be kind to them. So I'm not sure how I answer that question, but in terms of patriarchal, like, I feel you, because, you know, female, Asian, you know, I tick all the boxes. But I don't know, we can only do what we can. You know, this is not a perfect society. That's why the Buddha said, hey, practice, get out of samsara, we don't want to come back. You know, how do we know we are not a man in a previous life? You know, we've been so many rebirths. We have men, dog, women, transgender. We are so many things. So we don't know what kind of life we have. And I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying, this is a society. We do what we can. We deal with one difficult problem at a time. You know, as a community worker, not a social worker yet, I deal with problems, multiple problems at a time. They're all presenting with problems. They're all needing urgent support. I can't deal with everything at the same time, so I deal with one at a time. I can help one person, then I'll do one. I can help two, I help two. I can only do what I can within the resources I have. If I think of all the 10 problems, I'll go a bit you know, I will go crazy and I can't help them. So, and we deal like whoever is, and we try our best to influence the society because essentially, you know, we are part of society and we just do what we can and hope for the best, really. And I'm sorry if I can't answer your question the best, but really it's, when we live in this life, we can't help but hurt other people, intentionally or not. And I encourage you, perhaps, practice a bit of forgiveness and look, focus on the positive in life, on the good. It doesn't mean the bad's not there, but at least focusing on the good will give you some respite from the bad, if that makes sense. So the last question is, how do we know the actual goal or destiny of our life? I'll let you know when I find out. the thing is, from my personal point of view, there is no actual goal or destiny. You have to decide on your own. From a Buddhist perspective, of course, the goal is enlightenment. Disappearance, we want to disappear and never come back because samsara is suffering. This world is suffering. It leads to, rebirth is suffering. We have to deal with misogyny. That's suffering. We have to deal with people who hurt other people. So that's the goal. But everyone is different. Like, I can't tell you what your goal is. It's something for you to find out. Find what works for you. The only thing that I'm a bit worried using the word advice, but the only suggestion rather I can give is to reflect on your values. As Sandra was saying, I was studying to become a social worker, and the big part of the course is reflecting on your values. And through there, you feel it will help you find out more about yourself and what you like and what you don't like. So I didn't choose to be a social worker. It just sort of fit me. It's my personality. And it works for me. But some people like to be OT. Some people like to be a doctor. Some wants to become a teacher. And they are all great professions and stuff and reach to a certain goal. So I'm sorry I can't answer your question except to encourage you to reflect on your values, on your morality, or ethics, and what works for you, and move on from there. I hope that's a good answer. All right. Sorry, I think I go way over time. I apologize. But if you have any comments or questions, please. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to say just a comment, okay?
Yeah.
Because it's a very interesting topic, Yeah. Mm-hmm. In dealing with fear, we should always bear in mind, that fear is a feeling, mm-hmm. It's a feeling, mm-hmm. It's unpleasant feeling, intense feeling, And we should bring in the foundations of mindfulness in trying to deal with it, okay? Mm-hmm. When there's fear, it's just there's something about, it's not a thing which happened, It's something which is going to happen, okay? Mm-hmm. Quick, And then our mind is like fighting it, mm-hmm. You understand that thing, imagining things, exaggerating things, or the worst, okay? That's why you have this intense feeling. As for example, like fear of flight of aeroplane before you're going, there's an intense feeling of fear, Or waiting for a medical report, there's an intense, mm-hmm. It's a short-term thing, yeah. So So we have to realize that this thing, okay, and bring it under control, knowing that it's something's happening. It's a natural thing; it happens to everybody, okay. Short term, this thing, you are intensely fighting it now. And some fear, you can't use other things than meditation to go over. You can't do it, you know, because it is very intense. And then you notice that after the fear, everything is okay, there's a strong elation, you know, you go up, you feel so happy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So you have to understand this thing. Bring the thing under control, don't let it lead you, you know? Mm-hmm. If it leads you, this thing then becomes more intense, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can have, if it's like breakdowns or what the thing do, you know? The other thing is fear and stress, and it's you know, stress, anxiety, if something happens, it's a long thing. That stress and or anxiety. Fear is a short-term thing.
Hmm.
You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're something coming, you're fighting that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, totally. I understand.
And use the mindfulness to bring it under control. Mm-hmm. And also the thing is, sorry, which if I have a fear,
mm-hmm.
the Buddha saying, patience, tolerance, and understanding are the highest virtues every man should practice.
Yes.
Yeah, and also there's mm-hmm. sometimes in life you have to go through endurance too. It's not long, short thing only,
mm-hmm.
very intense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much for that, Eddie, because you're totally right. Fear, anxiety is about is being in the future, you're not being in the present. And understanding it and being with the unpleasant feeling is the only way. So because we don't like unpleasant feeling, we're always trying to make it better. And in the process of making it better, we made it worse. So yeah, thank you so much for that, Eddie. Okay.
Any more questions?
Should I? Okay, should I finish?
Yeah, let's take our conversation to the tea room.
Yeah.
Because one thing about the care group is we love a chat, love a lively discussion.
Yeah.
And I know Ron has put some food out in the kitchen, mm-hmm. and we all love a cup of tea.
Yep.
And if you'd like to come over with us,
mm-hmm.
then we can continue on the conversation.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I just loved your talk.
Oh, thank you.
And I loved this whole interactive experience. We had a lady contact the care line,
uh-huh.
not the care line, the care email.
Uh-huh.
And she said, I live in Brisbane and I'm so impressed by what you're doing in WA and this effort to bring people together and connect. And I want to be part of that. But I'm in Brisbane. The borders are closed. All I've got Zoom.
So
I really hope she's watching and she enjoyed tonight's talk.
Yeah. Oh, I hope someone benefited something. It's kind of go here and there and everywhere. It's Ajahn Brahm style, right?
It's beautiful, beautiful.
Well, anyway, I'd like to offer what I just said for your reflection and for hopefully end your suffering. If I cause more suffering, I'm sorry. You'll have to forgive me. So I'll just... like to offer whatever merits we've made today and share it with all beings. May all beings be kind to one another and care for one another and live in harmony. May all beings understand peace and happiness. And may all beings find the freedom from suffering and from desire. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Chan?